Hello and welcome to the Tiny Plastic People podcast. This is a special podcast in this case, where we do something we've not really done before. In the middle of 2022, James and myself decided that we wanted to run another one of our less standard wargaming events, and decided also to record something of a little podcast documentary about it. This is That Story. Join us now for episode 4, which was a post-event recap. What worked, what didn't, and what we'd do differently. And really, defining that all auteurs really are awful. Good evening. Welcome to Tiny Plastic People special podcast. A podcast where we talk about, well, up to now we've been talking about an event we were going to run. But now we're talking about an event that we have run in the past. The usual way that things have happened. Joining me tonight is James. Hello, James.
Greetings. It is I.
And I'm a very tired Drew on a Thursday night, which is probably not the best time to record anything.
It is the post-hump day continual downward slope before the slight upward tick of the end of Friday and then the continual slump of the rest of the time.
Yes, and that's possibly even more optimistic than I would be about the end of Fridays. Anyway, the last time we gathered here was almost 4 months ago, 3.5 months ago. So we have 3.5 months worth of stuff to discuss. And then the intent of these podcasts was to give a kind of peek behind the curtain of what goes into running some kind of event. Yes, that's probably as good as anywhere point to say. James, can you remember 3.5 months ago? What did we start doing after that?
Well, I had to look back at my Instagram account to figure out what I was doing. Alone Music on Instagram, by the way. Lots, you know, get the plugs in early because, yeah, may fall asleep during this one. What was I doing 3 months ago? So, trying to think back, well, the smart thing which we have not done is we haven't edited our previous podcast before embarking upon this one. So, apologies if any of this is not news to you, but we were running an event and that event required lots and lots of terrain being made or at least hunted down and models to be painted and created and assets to be created and printed. So between the recording of the last podcast, which checking on the dates we have off air decided was about the 20th of March, we not only delivered everything for the event, we then ran the event, and now we're in the post-event, woo, we did a thing, phase. Yes. We're actually slightly past that as well, because we didn't do anything for the last 2 weeks because we were tired. So
yeah, that's probably the main takeaway, is that after doing these things, you're very tired and you don't want to do anything else.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, if you want a way to burn your entire social, like, budget for figuratively, metaphorically, and literally, for a good few months, run an event. You will do all those things.
Clever, because I had another event immediately the weekend afterwards.
Smart.
It was a double whammy of feeling very tired and unwilling to do anything, but it was at least an event I didn't have to do anything for. I just had to turn up and play games, which even in my most tired state, I can almost manage.
It's actually quite refreshing. I did the same thing the last weekend. I went and played just a little bit of 10th edition and like for the first time, and that was nice.
Oh, yes, you did. It was just like, this was even better because I didn't have to actually, but you didn't have to bring any games yourself. You just turned up and other people had even set the games up for you.
Oh,
so
what
you
beauty.
Literally just had to exist.
Imagine going to an event and having everything just set out for you. How lovely.
I know.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, yes, so back on the straight. So Thinking back to where we were in March, we were probably panicking slightly about the amount of stuff that we had to get done by the point that we had decided, because we had set up our date was set around February sort of time. So we probably talked a little bit about the booking of the venue and sorting all that bit out in the last episode.
Yes.
Yes, we had the venue booked. We knew roughly how many people were coming, although I will get on to that later, probably. And we had enough time to say, okay, well, we're going to do this event and we need to know how all these games are going to run. And that was probably the biggest challenge mentally, other than painting all the terrain. Like painting terrain and creating terrain and things like that. And I could also talk a little bit about that in a bit. But for me, the biggest stressor of the whole thing was making sure that we had something for people to actually do when they came to the event.
Yes.
That would be narrative. Yeah.
And that can be quite open as well on what people consider, not just what people consider narrative to be, but also what people expect to do, that some people expect to go on a curated experience and then other people might expect a lot more freeform, I suppose.
Exactly. And what we had I actually can't remember if we had decided on it by the 20th of March, or I should probably be looking in the files while I talk instead of just vamping on my memory, which is clearly shot. But what we had decided on, or kind of come up with the idea, it wasn't really decided in a way. We knew roughly how many games we wanted to play, and because we had done some playtesting of the game system that you developed, like, very well, by the way, because we had a rough idea of then, like, how many games we could run, then that gave shape to, like, okay, well, how are we going to get people to do interesting things within that system? And looking back at my scenarios thing, April was when we had kind of solidified the fact that we were going to try and run the games on a series of mission cards. And the mission cards, because the messages which we had gotten back, and we talked about this in the previous episodes, that we had polled lots of people, and people kind of wanted to do very narrative things, but they almost wanted, you kind of got the vibe that people wanted their own things to achieve so that they would feel that they were having some impact on what the narrative of the event was. So there's different types of narrative events, and a lot of the time, narrative 40K, narrative Age of Sigmar, is like, let's just have some fun games around some scenarios, and maybe people are in teams, but we're just playing AOS or just playing 40K.
Yeah, kind of anything that isn't a total shit kicker of a match just defaults to narrative.
Yeah, basically. And that's fine. That's a really nice way to run a narrative campaign. Other ways are just like, you just play matched play, but you just tot up the scores, and then the scores go into a hat, and then your team either wins or it loses, and then someone tells you what happens. But because we had gone for a more skirmish style game, people are more attached to individual characters within their warbands, and that means that they need something which is a little bit more personal to actually do within the games. And the method which we came up with is actually quite similar to what 10th edition 40K is now, but we did it first because we did it in March, is creating like mission cards which people could hold on to. And it's almost the thing that matches together with other people's missions so that that creates the game space on the table, where you've got multiple people with different ideas of what they want to do. You've got NPCs floating around, usually townsfolk getting absolutely bullied. And then that is the thing that, like, okay, we're going to try and do this. We're going to try and achieve these goals in this game or across these rounds of the whole session, the whole event. And if you can complete those things, you earn points for your faction or different factions as well. So every card had like different factions and things to influence. And that took over a month to just write all of those cards, because it turns out you need a lot of them when you've got a lot of people coming to your event. And I say a lot of people. We had, I'm going to say, 16 players in total. Maybe a few less, but including myself and yourself, Drew. But that still required us, and we got through nearly all of them as well on the day. Spoiler alert. But those cards, we needed a lot of them, so we polled again to the runners to like come up with ideas for them. But those ideas, you needed to edit them, needed to do passes to make sure they actually made sense, made sure that like nothing too difficult was in there, but also there was things which could be achieved in quite a fun way. So that was a big, big task. And what that also meant was that we had things to tie the different factions of our narrative to. So one thing that was still in flux as well until probably the last month, maybe even later than that, was actually how many factions do we have? How many NPCs and like what characters are actually in play on the day? Because we didn't quite know how many people would turn up, and we didn't quite know like how these would balance together. So
yeah, it was very much like moving parts, weren't there, that needed to be captured in a way that wasn't rigidly relying on anything. So
yeah. And the way which we kind of overcame this, and it's probably the reason why we're quite tired, is that we did more than we needed to at every corner, really. So the mission cards, we ended up with 100 of them. Now, we did use most of those, but we probably could have gotten away with editing them down or giving some people the same mission in different situations. But, you know, we didn't know exactly how many people would show and how many games they would get through and how many missions they would take at once and how quickly they would burn through them. Like, we didn't quite know. But 100 felt like a good number, so we did 100. And there are 100 pretty good missions, really. They're not all applicable. They didn't quite all mesh together, but that was the point of the game runners on the day. So yeah.
I think there was a definite challenge, because not everything, this is, you know, the problem with anything that's asymmetric, is that if you have asymmetric games and asymmetric missions, there's always the risk that you don't have interaction between the players, and you get to the table and then both sides are like, well, we might as well just do our thing, we both succeed and go home. And although it's interesting to have some elements of that, which are, you want to have that flexibility so you're not just forcing conflict. You know, there isn't just a, this is a fight encounter, now you must fight. But you do at the same time, you know, people have paid to play games. So you do need to make sure you are, what did I say, pay. People have turned up to play games.
And people have invested their time,
that's
and
it, yes,
money to spend, to travel, to get hotels. Actually, that was the thing that was making me feel the most guilty of all throughout the whole thing, was just like, oh God, I hope there's something good in this, because people have paid money to stay in this hotel, stay in an Airbnb, travel quite a distance to hopefully have fun.
I mean, that's a separate part of the topic, which is, are the prices of UK hotels ruining wargaming?
Well, the answer to that is yes, and there's not much we can do about it as we just continue to inflate like a big balloon.
Yes. Just start having events in Europe where the hotels are inexplicably considerably cheaper.
Yeah, and just get coaches to them, because coaches are really cheap. So,
I mean, as long as you fly, driving, or, you know, so yeah, getting the train, and still cheaper to fly as well. So,
oh yeah,
it's just very unenvironmentally friendly.
Yes, so back on track. So we did a lot of work around the mission cards, and we called them contracts in the end to keep things more slightly on theme. But that really gave us, once those were in place, that gave us something to hang a lot of the rest of the event off, because we'd had a lot of ideas floating around about like how people wanted to play games, how we'd get people from different games to different games. We had people who wanted to tell like a narrative which would be about the factions, but we also had people who wanted to tell a narrative about what their war band was doing, and this allowed us to do both of those things. And when we ran the event, while the first round was very much like, let's get used to these rules, let's get used to these different ways of making missions, it kind of settled into quite a good flow of people completing their contracts. When you completed a contract, you moved points up on a faction's board, but also if you failed a contract, it would move points up on an opposing faction's board. And
yeah, so I suppose that's one of the things, it's always a good takeaway, is to, you know, even in failure, you were almost failing forward. There wasn't just a, oh, you didn't do something, therefore nothing happens, or you didn't do something, so your own score goes down. It's that,
yeah,
something was, actually, I suppose this is probably a almost a sort of a motto for the entire event, because it ended up on the rules side as well, is that action always does something, that it doesn't provoke a sort of zero action response.
Yeah, exactly. And not having too many negatives for doing something wrong. You basically, lines only went up, and they went up in different speeds, and that was the interesting thing. And a few narrative things like didn't quite work based on the numbers of things. Like, we had these narrative trackers, which I designed basically a week before the event and got them printed, and they had 50 dots for us to put dots along on the trackers. And it just so happened that one of the factions was going to fill that much quicker than all of the others, even if they were failing their missions, because I'd kind of miscalculated how many pluses I'd put on the other sides of different cards. So as a runner, it was like, well, I can see that they're doing well, but I don't want them to do too well. So like, when everything had one plus on it, I would just put like one sticker on, or like if it had more stickers, it would be like, I'm still just going to put one sticker here. And another
key thing for your writing there, wasn't it, of the, when you actually did the set up the scoring for things, it wasn't a fixed numeric scoring. It wasn't
exactly
that, you do this mission, you gain 5 points with your faction. It was that you just gain a higher weighting of benefit for your faction, so it did allow for it to be adjusted on the day. And obviously you could avoid that by doing a lot of modeling of the event up front, and
yeah, but we're doing a narrative event, and there was only so many of us.
Yeah, exactly. And I think going with your gut is probably the better way of doing that. I'm actually just looking here at the Discord and talking about going with your gut, and it's able to look through and see when we're talking about stuff. I am surprised by how close to the finished product we were just after the last recording we made. So we recorded the last one of these on the 20th. On the 27th, you posted, James, a time breakdown for the event. Your suggested day, number of missions, number of sort of how long everything was going to take, you know, rules deduction and stuff. And barring the second day, where we went from having three games to having two games, we pretty much hit it dead on the dot, including to the finish time.
Hell yeah. I mean, that's pretty good. I guess that's also, like, that's down to us knowing roughly how long the games would take. And also, we consulted with people to say, do you want this to be, like, a day jammed full of content, so you're all exhausted by the end of it? Or do you want it to actually be quite chill and fun? And people generally opted for chill and fun. And I'm quite glad that we delivered that. In a very hot room, by the way. We haven't mentioned how hot the room got.
Yeah, but I guess that's the weather is a problem to your existence.
But I guess we're not quite there yet for the actual event on the day. But planning those times was something just to always keep in your head. Like, you can adjust times, and we didn't announce the times until probably about 5 days before, finally. But knowing that we wanted to work to roughly 5 games helped the numbers of missions you need to create, the numbers of tables you're going to have, and then the numbers of players who are playing on those tables. So
yeah,
it's good to have those things in mind quite early on, because if you don't, you're going to shoot yourself in the foot and maybe not have enough terrain. So
that's it. I think we were that's one of the things about how you have reliability. I'm sure we talked about it before, is that having three players per table gives you a lot of advantages in a certain way, which it doesn't give you in normal war games. In normal war games, it tends to be that someone gets bullied. It always makes sense to bully someone and then bully the next person, unless your missions in a normal war game are kind of set up in the right way, I suppose. But with three people for a game that, you know, the kind of missions that we wrote, and I suppose, how would you phrase it? It's almost like a rules thing. It goes back to the terrain as well, but it's like the area of effect of a group on the table, the limit of that area of effect, how physically far your models are reaching in a turn or in a sequence, really affects how they're going to interact with the people. So you can't effectively alpha strike someone off the board. You can't do a lot of things that throw the balance out. If your area of control is quite small with your models, and then you have three people per side, you can't afford to just fight one other person, because then you've got one person who's given free rein to do whatever they want. And I think that in a lot of ways strengthens, you know, if someone else was, you know, if in any way this thing is a guide to how other people might want to do stuff, it's, yeah, definitely think about how missions can influence other people, and also how effectively war bands and the rules that war bands have, or, you know, parties, whatever players have got, how effectively they can interact with each other, and how effectively from the off can they choose to act upon the other players.
And that goes into the missions, which we favoured more as well, was a lot of them, like, it once, like, the mental block had broken to writing missions in the way that the games needed was broken, and, like, you could see how players could interact or give players interesting things to do. A lot of those things were about, like, you would do something on the battlefield or on the in the town which you were fighting in, which would affect everybody, but you could only do it once. Or you could do something which would suddenly change things for everyone, but that also changed things for you as well. So, for example, one of the missions had you, if you went up to a tree and killed someone next to the tree, be they NPC, be they another fighter or something, you would essentially strike the tree, and then every other tree on the battlefield would drag people towards them, so you would change what they do, or, like, you would just change the whole battlefield for everyone, but not in a way that kills everyone. It just gives people different challenges to keep coming up with while they're trying to do their missions.
Yeah, a lot of stuff that certainly from the missions that I was writing, I very much went into it with an attitude of a lot of these things should be complications. They should be a little bit nasty and a little bit not divisive isn't the right word, but they should make things more complicated for everyone on the table. Whether it's sort of summoning creatures or, you know, hostile creatures, or whether it's causing annoying terrain effects, or whether it's, you know, it should always be something that it's almost asking a question. It's asking a question that then you have to answer on the table. I suppose it's leading into the sort of, I don't want to say improv, but it's that, you know, you need
it's to... It gives room for improv, and it gives room for players to have fun interaction. Because the other thing which we tried to do on the day, because we knew that a lot of the missions would have NPCs, but that means that if one mission says, oh, I'll put D6 town folk on the board, and another player on that same board has add 4 town folk, just say, well, just add 4 town folk then, but they're the same town folk for your mission.
Yeah,
and then you're fighting over them.
You have to interact with the same bodies. Yeah. It's not like you've got a pocket. I mean, that's interesting as well, because I think going into this, that was one of the things that I didn't agree wholly on was the use of NPCs. We'd used them in the past for Inc. 28 events, but they were paced very differently. They were very PvE. Whereas I felt for the scale of this event, it was much larger, that you would want a sort of PvP far stronger element. And it was later in the day that I think we really settled on having NPCs for this thing, because we've got the three people per table, where that was enough. But I think in hindsight, it was something that I was wrong about, and it did work reasonably well, actually. And because it was set in a city, a weird Age of Sigmar-y city, it did make the place feel more alive, and it was a chance to bring out character in a sort of very, very Bloodborne-y way that, we don't have load screens, we don't have items. Well, we did have item descriptions, but, the NPCs and the way the NPCs work was a good way of bringing in flavour to the table.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the amount of work that people had put in, not just on their warbands, but also bringing weird and interesting NPCs along, even if they were just like zombies, or if they were like monsters that could go onto the table, even if we didn't use the NPC rules that we had and we just used them as either moving objectives or things which you could interact with but you couldn't do that much else with, that just gave the boards a bit more flavour. I think out of all of the rules, the NPC rules would probably be the bit where we should go back and have a look at them, just to make sure, like, if someone else was to run a game, that they have more like fun without a GM being there to help guide them.
Yeah,
because that's when ours worked the best, was when someone was helping run the NPCs.
They were just our Inc. 28 ones ported across almost wholesale. And this is part of it. I'm looking here at this sort of Discord. It's at the end of March and start of April, it looks like we've got so much done. And then in reality, actually, there was just a lot. It was 2 months basically of polishing, because we needed to get the rules out to people. Well, I think we already had the rules out in draft form, that we'd written the rules so the rules people could gen their warbands, but there were certain things that we actively didn't do, we chose not to do, which was abilities and things. So the sort of special source that for each warband was very much defined to be a different thing. But yeah, looking at sort of this time in April, so early April, end of March time, the bare bones are all there, and it's like, part of me now is like, what did we just coast for 2 months?
Oh my god, why would you say that?
Yeah, well, I don't remember. That's the point. It's helpful actually that just into April, we did a second play test, or I did a second play test with someone, with Tom G off other TPPs. Because we'd already done one playtest in February, hadn't we?
Mm-hmm.
And then, did a second one, which was a sort of more complete playtest. Yeah, so I'm trying to think of it about, moving forward as well, that we've talked about submission things. Because, the first week of March, first week of April, sorry, James, you've put an example contract card up here, which is basically the same. There's a few slight differences. It does have fixed numbers, and it does have plus or minuses.
Those came like almost out of late. I don't want to say it's out of laziness, because I put an example one there, but I hadn't put 100 of them there, Drew, had I?
No, you hadn't. You just put the one. That was your first one.
And that one was like the example to try and make people submit more ideas, so we didn't have to write 100 ourselves. And we didn't.
A day later, I've been compiling missions and such. I've started a big table. So there you go. I've currently written about 30-ish. So we needed a good chunk more. And then you needed a coffee and a donut. So,
I deserve treats.
Who doesn't? I mean, so yes.
So, yeah. At that point, we knew roughly like the shape of everything, and it was just delivering on it. And a big part of delivering on it. Like we've mentioned terrain. For me, it was just to make sure that I had enough terrain which I could bring that would make interesting battlefields. That was a big time sink, just painting and building a lot of terrain.
Yes. I mean, you talked a bit about for the NPCs as well, but it is worth saying now, before we probably forget later, is that the players we had really came through for helping on the event and supplying both NPC models and also terrain. So whilst I was going to say we, I'm just going to say James, because James did all the work. So whilst you, James, did a lot of work developing our own terrain, because you can't rely on other people, you know, in your planning stage, certainly. On the actual day itself, we had we had far too much. We didn't have too much terrain. We had an awful lot of NPCs. People did great work. Yeah, and then we did have a really good selection of terrain as well, and let us do some really interesting boards. And I think what it let us do as well is rotate boards out. So, which is always the issue with like feet. And I very much, the limited bit of terrain making I did was very much it boring terrain. That I was like, well, if everyone else brings the frosting, then you've got something there that can just be the sort of the bread, as it were. That
you had some really, I mean, you're doing yourself a disservice. You had some really nice kind of like chunky, almost like sandstone raised platforms and things with block line of sight. You could put them in the middle of things and then you could build around them. So
yes. Yeah. And I mean, they were very literally built. Well, foam blocks to build off. So building blocks of, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And they look really good. And yes, like I said, and like you said as well, it's like people really came through on the weekend. So we had so much terrain that, and so many characters that we had a lot of flexibility with what we did. And we encouraged people to make their boards when they were entering into rounds with the players around them. They had enough stuff to choose from. They could say, oh, we're going to fight in a village today. So they could just pick up all of the ruined buildings or the more complete houses, buildings and the houses. And then someone else could say, well, I'm going to fight in a forest then, and put together a forest. And then someone else would say, oh, but I want to fight on islands. So they could roll out a water thing, put some actual islands onto there, and then build terrain around it. I think it was incredibly successful. I don't know how we quite played it off, but it worked incredibly well. So
the other person I want to shout out, I meant to shout out before, and I was looking on my phone to find their Instagram and I can't remember it now, is Riz, who did some amazing art for us.
Yeah, we haven't even got to Riz yet, because he came through with amazing illustrations that we used on. So thinking about the run-up to the event, one, we were painting a lot of terrain and NPCs, because we needed kind of, the idea was to have too much stuff at all times. But to do that,
I think
that,
it's a balanced level, isn't it? Because that was 24th of April was when we got our first art. This is how I'm just now planning things. So 24th of April, I started making made a start on items. So magic items and equipment and things for the game. And then at the same time, we got our first art from Riz, and it was real good.
Well, it wasn't the first art, because he also did the really nice map. So,
okay, well.
And one of my regrets on the day is that I'd forgotten to print the map. So sorry, Ewan, for that. the art which we'd... And the art which we commissioned him to do was the faction symbols. And the ones which he did are like, they worked on so many different levels that they are literally everywhere. They were on the back of the mission cards. They were
nice.
On the items. They were in the rule books. They were on the faction boards when you were choosing things. They were on the back of the player command boards. They were on the back of the player fighter cards. They were everywhere because they were so good. So it was like, I'm going to use these everywhere. Thank you very much. So
I mean, I'm always, I've probably talked about this before, but I am always very wanky in my creative, you know, events, things that I've run in the past, different types of events. And I do always think that it can never be understated, is to make your game as diegetic as possible, that it's so much more engaging when, yeah, like James is saying, you're getting missions on mission cards, and the mission cards have art, they've got style, they've got flavor text. Like all the items and flavor text that we'd wrote, or it wasn't just you get a plus one sword, it was the eel sword of so-and-so, of Sir so-and-so, and it does, you know, it builds up the world and it makes you feel like you're doing more as part of the world. I mean, maybe players would just totally disagree with me, but it's like... Well,
it's there for if a player takes note of on the mission cards, there was like a quote or a, like, as if someone was giving you the contracts of what you needed to do, and then it had who it was attributed to. And sometimes it was the same person in different cards. Other cards, like, were not that, but they were, like, as if they were spoken to you, because we couldn't be everywhere at once GMing for everyone. So no. It was an opportunity to put flavor everywhere, like blasting the whole place with chili salt and making everything taste good.
I mean, and the obvious thing is there, is that it would be so easy not to have done it. You know, it would have been a lot less work.
Yeah, I was going to say, reflecting back on like the initial lore work that we did right at the start of this project, which we probably talked about in many moons ago, just to bear in mind that we recorded the first episode of this in June 2022.
Disclaimer, they didn't, is going to be the... I'll just fit that in. We'll leave it in the edit.
The lore part of the whole... endeavor fed into that. Like, we had so much lore sitting there, like with character names and just random ideas and things and places and stuff, which didn't impact the games themselves. They gave us just opportunities to quote something from so and so who is part of that faction. And like, I got really into just saying that everyone in the cities are just obsessed with aspic, so that then you could quote various people, such as like Raxban's aspic merchant supreme, and then that's what all the merchants trade in, is jelly and horrible goo and stuff, and you can just mix that in into everything else, bringing stuff in from other silly things which we've done in the past, where like in our Soulbound game from many moons ago, our characters all got obsessed with collecting little tiny idols of Nagash in essentially fantasy Happy Meals, but then putting those in as items for people to collect in the games, and then just making little reference that there's four of these to collect. And we were in the Realm of Death, after all. So, yeah, it's just a really good opportunity to do so much of that storytelling that is there for the players if they want it, and sometimes they might not even notice it's there, and that's also fine, but it just means that we've got such a grounding in the world.
So I think we've probably talked, there's a few things that we talked about in sort of prior to event we probably haven't covered, but I don't think they're that important, and just for the sake of sort of
brevity,
then yeah, I think we should move on to the day itself. So the first thing about the day that is worth checking if you are organising an event is whether your hotel has air conditioning or not, because it might be very, very hot and your hotel might be very, very made of glass, which is not a brilliant combination.
No, and they didn't have air conditioning because they were eco-friendly.
I was avoiding saying it's because they were eco-friendly, because I felt that was like maligning eco-friendly things. And then we're just like, hotel too woke for wargame convention. But yes. I mean,
they said they could open the doors, but the doors only opened 5 centimetres. So,
yes. I think, to be fair to the eco-hotel, it did work sort of okay. Unfortunately, I don't think it was designed for what was a incredibly hot. I think it was 30 degrees. When I drove back on the Sunday night, and that is a very high temperature to be in a room full of sweaty nerds.
I was certainly crisping up, that's for sure.
But yes, on the day itself, so we had a very, well, I say we, you organised it all. So it was, we had a very nice hotel conference room in a quite a kind of, we're lucky it was quite quiet as well. This is on a weekend. You'd think that most conference rooms probably are quite quiet in hotels, but it was a good hotel. We had a sort of out-of-the-way place. They were very good at providing lots of water and things, facilities. They were very accommodating. So, yeah, that all went very well. And obviously everyone, as we've said, brought a lot of terrain along. But then on the day itself, yeah, it went quite well. We've had feedback. So unless people are lying on their feedback forms to spare our feelings, people seem to enjoy it. Was there anything you would sort of single out from your running experience, specifically on the running side from the day, that you think sort of went particularly well? Or
so the one thing that we had kept engaged were people who wanted to help with running, like as quote unquote game runners. Having those people there was absolutely invaluable, because by about two games in, I was already fairly run ragged by just running between people's tables, checking they were okay, asking them what was going on their tables. And then someone else would come up to me and say, I've got a rules query. And I would say, no, Drew's the rules guy. Please ask Drew. And it's just like Drew's being asked other questions by someone else. So having those runners there to just be mindful of what's going on, tell me when something interesting has happened, ask questions, but also they were just taking initiative all the time. They, like, we did like a little pep talk at the beginning of just like roughly how we want these games to go.
Yeah,
but also just encouraging people to improvise if stuff looked difficult or looked like it could just result in quite a bad experience or a complex and bitty experience that someone might not have fun with.
Yeah, and I don't think you want to be too precious, do you, about anything? That's probably the...
No, and I straight up remember telling one of the players to just change their mission at this point if that was okay with them, because it wouldn't work with the other things that are going on, but they could keep the mission for another time. And working with the players to make sure that their games were having fun interactions, but they weren't getting too complex, because that was my fear with all of the mission cards, that was that at some point one table is going to pick the four missions or three missions that just won't work together. And that did happen, but we worked through it. And yes, that was good. Other highlights, I mean, straight up the players bringing so many amazing models. Like, there wasn't a single unpainted model there, I don't think. I didn't see one. And bringing so many NPCs, bringing so much life to the games themselves and understanding of what their warbands were there to do. Like, that really just gave me energy to get through the rest of the weekend, because it was very hot. There was a lot of questions, and yeah. How about you? Let's go. I've not asked you many questions, so what was your highlight?
I think my highlight actually is almost a zero result, which is they got to a certain point where, and you said before that I was doing a lot of the rules stuff, they got to a certain point where I wasn't doing anything. I think that's pretty late on the first day, and everything was just running itself. And that, you know, it isn't, you know, that is in part because, you know, we had people on the tables who were, you know, the people assisting on the tables, they were really helping, and the players were all in a good attitude together. And it, you know, I think it obviously helped that everyone there, say everyone, I'm just, almost everyone there was known to each other beforehand.
Yeah, almost. I know a couple of people definitely were new-ish.
Yeah, new-ish. So it was, I think it would have been different if everyone didn't know each other going in. I think you would have to have a lot more control. You couldn't sit back. But yeah, certainly for me, it was the sitting where you sit back and everything is running along. And I've had that with other events as well, where actually, yeah, there's a machine is, it's working. And it, you know, people are getting it. People are enjoying themselves. There aren't big collapses and things. You know, there's no disasters have happened. And I think that's always to me a really rewarding thing where it's like, yeah, all I'm doing at that point then is you're just walking around and seeing what people are doing, and sort of, you know, there's a degree of sort of checking on stuff when you do that, but yeah, at the end of the day, it's just pleasant that you can see, you know, people enjoying the stuff that you've done,
each other had done it as well. That was the thing, was that because so many people had contributed ideas, and like, be they the game runners and the people beforehand in the running, or the people who brought terrain, or the people who brought like extreme amounts of lore. I'm gonna have to actually shout out that Wham Badger John had brought essentially a whole lore book of his Skaven and a submarine along with him in a treasure chest, and that's just one thing, which I mean, that was incredible, but like, that was just one thing that like one player brought. Every player had brought something similar to that, be it lore or just like an intense knowledge of their backstory or just interesting models, and everything was just so fun and interesting that, yeah.
Would you sort of then say, you know, shouting people out, we've talked about it as a runner's point of view, and obviously we can't give a player's point of view, but was there anything as a non-runner that you think sort of stood out for the weekend? Anything that was sort of, I don't know. I suppose, yeah, just as the whole experience, is there anything that you thought worked particularly well? And, you know, and again, stuff that maybe would be useful for other people. Because I think we did have a lot of terrain, and that helped.
Yeah. As an organizer, I can't stress enough the idea to just say have more terrain than you think you need, and like, or have as much terrain as you think you need and then get more, like mats as well, like just table mats. We weren't in a gaming hall, we were in a hotel, so there was nothing to cover the tables with by default, which is one thing that most gaming halls and game stores and Warhammer World etc just has, and I was quite used to playing in places like that, and then just the fear of not having enough stuff to cover tables with was just with me the whole time. So absolutely bring mats, encourage people who you know, just like tap every resource you can to just get enough stuff to run events, and then get a little bit more. Because that little bit more is where the flexibility comes from when someone's having two people have chosen a mission where you need to blow up a church, so you need to go find two churches or two things to be churches or a graveyard. Yeah. Or we need two boats on this board, but we need one on this board, so let's swap it over. And also, from I'm just going terrain heavy, like walkways and boards and things, like you made loads of these and I made quite a lot of them as well, or just like painted them and 3D printed things and stuff, things to go between other things, like wooden platforms and stuff. Just bring loads of those because they help you construct the battlefields as well.
Yeah, I suppose if we are thinking of it from a sort of just a general organizer's point of view, my thing, I think I would always say as well, as if you wanted advice, is or give people advice, is that it's focusing on stuff you know you will use almost, because you do have a finite amount of time. And when we talked about before about sort of organizing missions, it's like you could have worked out every mission scoring and you could have made out super balanced. You could have done a lot of things differently. You could have scripted things very heavily and made sure that, you know, oh, well, at 12 o'clock on this day, this event's going to happen, this thing's going to happen. But it's...
Yeah.
It's
when we had ideas about that, didn't we?
Yeah, I think it has value. And I I like running that kind of way, but that's a personal thing. And, you know, this is the other thing, everyone has their own style, and perhaps there's a different thing to talk about. But you know, the thing I'm just thinking here is, like, it's focusing your efforts, and it's always think about who is going to see, how many people are going to see these things, how many on the day, you know, is this going to be a benefit to one person, or is it going to be a benefit to 10 people? And you do have to put your labours into the things that benefit the 10 people.
This is getting awful, a lot like the project management meetings I'm in right now. So,
well, it's all, this is, you know, to go full circle, and we are coming up on an hour for this recording. Is that we do end up on the project management note. We'd like to thank Notion, obviously, for its support.
Yeah, sponsored by Notion, but I wish they would pay us some money rather than me pay them money.
Yes, that's a weird kind of sponsorship. Is, I mean, I sponsor a lot of people in that case. Or I'm sponsored by a lot of people in that case. I mean, yeah. So yeah, I think it's good. I think it was a successful event. So that's the final question. Okay, so as we come up to the hour mark, what would you do differently?
I think the one bit of feedback that I had, so obviously you get feedback and everyone says they have a lovely time, and then someone says something negative and you're just like, oh my God, we ran the worst event and everything is terrible. I don't honestly feel that way. I do feel we ran a really good event, and I hope people really enjoyed it, and it sounds like they enjoyed it. But the one thing which I regret doing is kind of losing almost confidence in our narrative early on, not early on, the confidence in our narrative to be a little bit more narrative and help people understand that what is going on. Because I kind of felt that, so we had these trackers and the trackers were going up, and at the beginning of the day it was like kind of explained that as you complete missions, these trackers will go up and those will be influencing the factions. But I don't feel that that was fully explained enough, or it was obvious enough what was going on there.
I've done different things or similar things where it's like, you know, you do have trackers and the trackers change the world state.
Yeah.
That almost always is rules.
Yeah, it wasn't even that they were changing the rules. It was that we just didn't say what was happening, like, between rounds. And I think, we did, but we kind of said it to people individually, so not everyone was getting the full picture. And that was almost intentional, but I feel that bringing everyone along on a journey to just to highlight what had actually happened between the rounds a little bit better would have been the one thing that I wanted or would change. And like some of the stuff was quite exciting that was actually happening. Like to briefly go over what happened in the narrative in probably 4 minutes was that the more players were investing in basically causing chaos in the land, it was reinforcing the rest of the factions to basically become more militarized, and they were basically becoming a police state while everything turned to chaos. And that was semi-intentional. That was like, well, every time someone blows up a building, that's going to make the police crack down more and more and more, the marshals in this case.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of the story which we were trying to tell a little bit. That was kind of a bit of the flavor. But also over in the corner, the forces of the Queen were like, if one person had focused on what they were doing with the Queen's missions, they would have taken them down a path of like the Queen is trying to perform a ritual to resurrect herself. And one player did glom onto that and did it. And that shaped the whole influence of like basically the second day. And that was really exciting that that happened. But I don't feel that it was explained quite clearly enough to people who might have not been just paying attention or had been to the loo or just another round started, so they just chose another mission and started playing.
Yeah.
So while we got the individual stories, we didn't quite get the meta story across until the very end. And then a few people felt a little bit blindsided by what had actually happened, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I also want to be able to say... one thing which we did after the event was collect what people did in every one of their games, or like their reflections on each game. And luckily, everyone's really good at remembering these things, at least some. So we've got a bit of document work to do before we finally put a nail on the coffin of this whole project, is to kind of release like a narrative log of what actually happened for everyone, so that they can tell how they impacted each other and the games they all had together, the story they all told, and then also collect together all the work which we put in, so anyone else, such as you, dear listener, can run something similar, take inspiration, etc. So
sounds good. Yeah.
How about you? Did you already answer, like, what was the thing you would change? Or
I was wondering whether you'd forget to ask me that, because then I wouldn't have to think. I don't think I have an answer, actually. I do agree that we could have captured things differently. It's what I was saying before. It's like, I said it in sort of two separate sections, actually. The style, and there is, and there's how much story go hand in hand and things. And that's rules on the day as well as rules for character generation and stuff. I would not have run an event like this if it was my project, I suppose. Like if this was your concept, and I followed your lead on that, and because that is interesting, because it's sometimes interesting to see how other people do things. So if the question is, was there anything I would change? I wouldn't change anything. Well, no, that's the thing. It's like, would I do something differently? Yes, by default, I would have done things differently, because I aesthetically and stylistically do things differently, just because that's how I write. I prefer a lot more kind of closed cycle stuff that we for this one resourced it a lot and got a lot of other people's contributions and things, and that isn't how I work. I'm far more, I don't want to say auteur because it sounds pretentious even by my wanky standards, but it's like I work in a much more closed cycle, because that's just how I am.
So are you trying to say that I'm the Marvel Cinematic Universe and you are Quentin Tarantino, just to be completely cancelled on everyone's slate?
I hope not. Because that's the thing, all auteurs are awful people, because you get like Kojima and stuff, and he's horrible as well, so...
Oh, be nice. He's all right. He said goodbye sausage in that tweet.
I mean, Miyazaki, he's okay. He's an auteur, and he's just sad and miserable, which is kind of the kind of auteur that I am. So, so would I do things differently? Yes, I would. But would I change anything about the event we ran? No. Would you polish things? Sure. And it's like hindsight's 2020, and it's like there's definitely stuff we talked about and did work on that we never used, but that's every project. And maybe that would be the mistake. He's trying to cram it all in. And we did decide not to include certain stuff. It's like there was talk of lots of different things, a lot more NPC engagement that people could go and talk to and stuff. And it's like, it's great stuff, but it's a wargaming event at the end of the day, and the focus should be on the wargames, I think. And I think that's what we delivered. And I was very pleased in what we did. And, and I think as things go, we probably were... high end isn't the right way of saying it, high investment on our side and on the side of people involved, because it was a lot of custom stuff. It's a lot of custom art, a lot of custom printed rule books. It was a lot of dedicated terrain, it was dedicated warbands. Like everything is bespoke. It's a bespoke rule set, and none of this stuff is designed to be used again.
It's kind of designed to be pulled apart and like used as a toolkit to do similar things this again, which is going back to like why I would say why the intention right now, hopefully by the time this comes out it will be done, to compile everything that we did, not as like almost as an artifact of the event itself, but also as a toolkit for other people to be able to run something similar or just take what they need from. I personally think the highlight of the like mission structure is probably the bit which I would take ahead into something else, because that gave us so many different hooks and just gave the players so many things to do and gave them choices of things to do, but not too many choices, because we could dole them out throughout the weekend. Like, you've only, like, if you're siding with this particular faction, there's only five missions to choose from, and someone else is going to walk in and grab the one you want if you're not going to make a decision quickly.
Yeah,
and I had no qualms in doing that. I certainly wouldn't have
done things that way, and it did work well. It was very flexible. It was very useful as a system, and it's certainly something I would think of. You know, if I was taking lessons from it personally, the things I'd like to run in future, yeah, it was a lot more effective than I would have guessed.
And seeing how 40K has now basically stolen our idea with the way they do the mission the mission, like the GT mission cards and things like that. There's a lot in there that, you know, can be narrative. So even if you're not going to use like R cards or the 40K cards, this idea of asymmetric games with different missions and secondary objectives and things really works for skirmish gaming, particularly if you're going to get those NPCs involved and allow things to be a bit silly as well.
Yeah.
So that was kind of, you know, it was a community event. We asked the community what they wanted to do, and we tried to deliver on so many things that we weren't going to deliver on everything, but things which we did, just like that focus of keeping it on the table helped make sure that everything affected the table, impacted the games themselves. They weren't too hung up on like, oh, I don't get to go to the shop after my thing. It's just like, no, we're just going to do quick bidding on items, and then other than that, nothing else. And then like, I was just like, well, there's so many items, I'm just going to start giving people items every now and then if they do something interesting. It's just like, oh, you knocked over a pot, have this. Or like, you completed that objective, great, take these. And being able to then build that to a satisfying conclusion for the last few games as well kind of worked as well. And like, props to Tom G, Respectable Geek, for basically saying, okay, right, we need to have a big game at the end, because we all agreed that we wanted a big game at the end. And it was like, oh, okay, well, what do you want to do? And then he said, well, just let's do two big games, but split it in half down the middle. And
yeah,
then
we very
the middle
much
of it.
Theory crafted that on the Sunday itself, because we didn't know for sure how things were going to develop. And, you know, you could have written 6, 8, 10 outcomes and then only, you know, and pick the one that we're closest to. But I think that's what, you know, close to what I was saying about recognizing effort, you know, where you spend your effort. This might just be an agile kind of conversation now. And
we had a scrum.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it really, it is to some degree that it's like, you could have written everything else in advance, but what benefit would that be? And you know, you only need one of them.
Exactly.
It's better to have the resources that you could then on the day, you know, adjust and do things.
The amount of time I spent just trying to make like outcomes for each faction in the same method as the like Outrun map, where you can jump between two options at everything, stuff like that. And it's like, no, you can't do that. Like, it worked, and trying to bring in the Warcry idea of having like the way Warcry narratives work is very much you bring your own gang through it and you have the different mission points, and then I played with those ideas for a while. You didn't know how many games people would get done. And is it, that doesn't work if you've only got five. So
yeah, it's definitely, you need some degree of structure, I think, for a weekend event just to hang things off.
Yeah.
But we're probably sort of just over an hour there, and we almost had a perfect segue, but then we talked over it, which is, you were saying before, James, that this was based on what kind of community feedback, but I'm going to put you on the spot now and say, and you might not want to answer this question, is what is the next event? In a non-binding way, what is the next event that you are going to run?
The one thing which I would probably run is I would probably want to go back to 40k, at the very least sci-fi, grimdark, off-brand 40k, because I've got more terrain and more bits and more ideas about how that could run. The AOS thing was hard, not from a not knowing the lore. Like, that was just fun to just get into. I don't know. Other than that, I'd want to do it in 40k. That, I think that's the only thing which I would want to do. But beyond that, I don't know. I want to enjoy playing some games that other people maybe write and come up with ideas for, no. Or maybe just help organize. Like, would I do it again? Maybe. But maybe not to the extent we went for this time, from a terrain and modeling perspective, because I mean, that was the bit that absolutely killed me.
Didn't we? Because it was terrain, models, rules, mechanics, everything was bespoke.
Graphic design, rulebook layouts, fiction. And that's with people helping. It was still just a lot of stuff to compile. Yeah. But also, I don't know. I'm also willing to be led by what other people want to do as well, and kind of like the enjoyment of quite a lot of it was coming up with a way to deliver on what people said they kind of wanted to do, and that challenge there is the bit that gives me, as a designer and as a user experience lead, in my other life. That is the bit that really makes everything sing, is taking what people are trying to achieve and just give them the playground in which they can achieve that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely do the cards again. That just seemed to be like the best bit for me. Like, it just worked, and it was just like, oh my God, this idea is working and people are having fun and like nothing too serious is going wrong with these. How have we managed this? Because we can file all the names off it and just do it again.
Yeah. I mean,
we've already written 100. We don't need 200, hopefully. I don't know if I'd want to do it with random people as well. That was the other thing we were reflecting on. Because it was very driven by community, we knew most of the people. And I guess that gave us a lot of forgiveness for being a bit like, oh, we didn't mean this to do this. Let's do this. But like sitting down with someone who's just like, you what? You don't know what this rule is probably going to be a bit more difficult. So your mileage may vary, dear listener, if you try and run it yourself with random people. But I suggest maybe your friends or community, talking to the audience now.
Suspect people are probably quite accepting. Okay. Don't rely on it, but yeah. I think as long as you're open with people and hope that they are nice, kind to you. So,
yeah. I think the thing which I'd want to do again also is I'm not sure Age of Sigmar, and this was my worry going into it, supports the more dirty, low-life fighting particularly well, because something godlike can happen at any
question, didn't we, during the rules dev, which is what level, or before the rules dev, what level do people want to play at? Do you want to be humans, or do you want to be a hero made of lightning?
And that's fine, and I think we got the balance just about right, but it did lead to some people making characters which were really, really tough, even though we had tried to not do that. Like, they still had this air of like superhuman about them almost a lot of the time. And I don't think that was a detriment to anything. I think we got the balance just about right. I know that some of the, like a little bit of the criticism was that your mooks, like your very weak characters, you could just knock them off the board like straight away. And if that was a quarter of your warband just like pinged off, by being flicked by a giant ogre or something, then that was pretty much led to quite a short game, and some of the games were quite short initially because of that, we intentionally so, but also not everyone's warband was quite, like, if you were going to say, oh, balance, there wasn't as much balance as there could have been. Whereas I think the sci-fi grimdark, people just have a little bit more of this downtrodden, like, oh, the humans in this situation are just terrible. Like, they're just weak and made bare, like, their bones are made of chalk, and, like, the horrible things are just going to happen to them. I think that's a little bit more accepted almost in that kind of way. Whereas Age of Sigmar is like, well, it is a city, but the city's got a skyport and dwarves, and they're trading with tree people. So,
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, how about yourself? What would you do again?
If I was running, or what's the next event I'm going to run? The advantage of it, you know, having the drive back up is always the theory craft as you drive. And I always come out of things quite stoked, but I'm still quite stoked, and I do have a strong idea for something. And what I would like to do is Lords of the Old Night freeing terror before the advancing light of an off-brand God Emperor. So it's unification war freaks escaping into the dark holes of the galaxy.
Nice.
So you are semi-co-op, that you're the worst people of the Old Night, the most heinous scumbags, gene terrorists, witches and cultists, or beyond cultists, priests of unspeakable deities that no longer have tread the stars, and you have been compressed down into a tiny small area and forced to work together before this utterly horrifying golden horde is going to sweep you away with its now sort of heinous stark light of the sort kind of new, like
FTL, but you're running away and you're the bad guy.
Yeah, you're the bad guys. It's very much you are the bad
but
guys.
But they're also the bad guy.
Yes, I mean they're the worst. They are the oppression of blazing light that just leaves no shadows, nothing, nowhere left for you to hide, as these sort of heinous creatures, the lowest dregs of humanity and sort of horrible sort of Xenos freaks and things. Them, yeah, all forced together into a tiny kind of diminishing area, and they have to work together, but obviously they're not going to, because there's only so many seats on the bus, and you have to work. That's my idea. That's what I'd like to do, and I'm just starting to think about how I do it. Oh, I've got some other projects I want to do in the meantime, but that is the next thing that I think I'm going to run.
Well, if you need a army of golden light, I am now just painting custodes for 10th edition. So
and you can't use them for heresy, so you have to use it for something else.
I don't want to use them in heresy. And also, like, funny you say, like, the old knight thing. I was thinking about, like, unification wars would be quite fun, wouldn't it? Because I've
I
got
really
some
like
converted
unification wars. Yeah,
I've got a few thunder warriors which I made out of Stormcast a while back, and I was thinking, why did I even make these? It was like, oh yeah, we had some unification wars chat going on, and I was like, oh yeah, that would be a fun thing to do.
Yeah, anyway. I've wanted to do unification wars for a while. You know, before when we first started talking about this, the thing that came to mind here was unification wars, but as the goodies? Question mark.
Question mark.
But yeah, the idea of doing the freaks and weirders, and also like the lords that you are, like, it's a, you know, real heroes, kind of like, sorry, not heroes, anti-hero level power things, really big fucking gribbly freaks is what I'd like to do.
Nice. Yeah. I think that's one thing which I'd like to get into something. It's just like a big horror, like actual, like, if I were to go off the deep end again, as we did last time, instead of lots of terrain, like horrible boss monsters, like big horrible things.
Yeah, well, that's the I mean, that if we're talking about aesthetic, that's how, you know, talking about custodes and things, like I did like the idea of like how I have this, again, going to the pit of wankiness, it's like how 40K works as perspective of characters within that universe. Like, our space, you know, all the models look real, but it's almost like, you know, it's like an extreme version of the ghouls in Age of Sigmar. Is that what, how would you represent a faction that is only how they see themselves, not how others see them? Or alternatively, how they see each other. Because this is the thing I always say, this weird thing, the dichotomy of orcs. It's like, why are orcs this kind of comedy clowns when they're actually monstrous? And it's like, well, maybe the models are how they see themselves, that they are these, like, they are having a good time. But for everyone else, they are this kind of filthy, you know, just teeth and fangs. There is no jovialty to them. They're not comedy pirates in space. They're monsters. But, you know, you can do the same thing with so many factions.
I think there's something really nice about it. Something I really love about the current 40K art. I think is it Phil Moss who does them? Or, like, I know they're not credited properly in the books anymore.
Yeah.
But the art which they're doing for, like, the interstitial art within the rule books and stuff, where, like, the humans are just horrible monsters.
Well, that's how I always like marines to be. This is going off topic, but
yeah, the Death Guard marines are insanely huge, covered in spikes and things. And then, like, the Sisters of Silence are just horrible monsters, and the Custodes are horrible monsters.
Yeah, but, I mean, wouldn't that be interesting to do the Custodes as, you know, do an opposing faction, and a Custodes is this sort of giant freak. They're not a knight. They're a Frankenstein monstrosity clad in gold. You know,
yeah, they're real, too wide. And,
yeah, you know, nothing's right about them. They're all unheimlich and just weird, but they're weird in a kind of a radiant light kind of, anyway, that I should probably stop before.
The literal, you know, when it's like the biblically accurate angels with the wings and eyes. Oh, there was someone who used to do Stormcast like that, and I always thought that that would be an amazing thing to do for Stormcast, where there's just too many wings, too many eyes, and they're huge and they glow. But anyway. So, I guess that's us wrapping up.
Yeah. I think we might do an extra episode, is what I'm thinking at the moment.
An epilogue.
There might be an epilogue where we answer questions from the players, because I know players had some questions.
Stay tuned
to see if that happens. But yes, well, thank you for joining me, James.
No worries.
Thank you for having me along for the journey of your or this entire project. So
yeah, thank you as well. Like, I said to you on the day, and I think I sent you a message afterwards, but it's good. I can now say it and then publish it as a podcast. That also, thank you for all your help and on the rules, and just so much support and being a sounding board for everything that we were attempting to achieve, and then we did achieve on so many different levels. It wasn't easy at all, and it was a lot of time and effort, and, you know, having someone there along the way to just tell you that you're doing something stupid and you're still doing it. That's always good.
It is, yes.
So, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, then a final thank you to our players and everyone who assisted.
Yes.
And then indeed. Also thank you to you for listening.
Dear listener.
Dear listener.
Like, you can do a psychiatric profile of, like, what you would do in our situation, or see all the faults and the mistakes that we made along the way, and just don't make those mistakes, and
just
you'll
play
be 40K. Fine.
Just
play 40K. 10th edition's out now. It's fine.
Yeah, don't worry about doing anything else.
It's got Crusade in it. That's all you need. Narrative.
I'm
going
to play 10th edition tomorrow for the first time to see if I don't like it or not. And at the moment, I'm not sure. So
it's good. It's fine.
It's good.
You'll
it's
have a
fine.
Nice time. You'll have a nice time.
I'll have a nice time. Okay, we'll see.
Yeah.
Tune in Space next time good. To see if I had a nice time. I'm not going to do any of our usual plugs, because this isn't a normal podcast.
No, it's an abnormal podcast.
This is a very abnormal. Just
extra just, wide abnormal freaks with too many wings.
Yeah. That's all we are is freaks. Freaks with too many wings. Anyway, I'm going to say goodnight because I want to go and eat some dinner. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, James, for joining me to have this chat.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you for joining James and myself, and we hope you'll join us next time on the Tiny Plastic People podcast. If you have any questions for us, you can reach us at thetinyplasticpeople@gmail.com. And if you want to see something of the event itself, James has produced a book about the event, which is available for download on thetinyplasticpeople.com. Cheerio, everyone, and thanks for listening.